Fish Henry Miss, we're considering Yahweh's testimony. He says that Yahweh spoke to Moshe, whose name means to draw out, and to Aaron, which means enlightened free will, in the realm of the crucible of Egypt while they were in a place of great human, religious, and political oppression, for the purpose of saying, this month shall be your first and foremost time of renewal. It shall be for you and on your behalf the first month of the year. Of course, in this country that claims to be godly and Christian, we begin our year with January, which is based upon the Roman pagan god Janus. And we do not begin our year with Abib. So our calendar is out of sync with Yahweh's calendar. If you want to be on God's calendar, you need to begin your year with Abib. It says, speak to the entire witnessing community of the children of Yisrael to say, and we have identified the nature of the children of Yisrael. If you want to be excluded from them, that is your choice, but means that you are not a child that that exists and endures in God's presence. On the 10th day of this month, accordingly, each individual shall obtain on their behalf a male lamb for himself and for his home, for his family, a lamb according to their father's household. And if a household is too small to exist, to endure with a lamb, then he and his neighbors who are near the Almighty's family shall share in accordance with the number of individual souls concerning the months of the mouths to feed in computing the number of lamb. All right, guys, so he is specified that this is the 10th day of the month, and yet he will tell us that Passover is on the 14th day of the month. Why do you think that God wants the lamb to arrive in the home 4 days before Passover?
Wants him to be known.
Personal. Yeah.
Yeah, wants him to be known. Wants him to have a personal relationship with the Passover lamb. Passover lamb is Yahusha. Wants him to be known, wants us to pay attention, to realize that, there is a real commitment, an enormous sacrifice being made by the Passover lamb to remedy the problem of our religious and political revolt against God. So he's very clear here. The lamb shall come into the home 4 days before Passover on the 10th day of the month. When did Yahusha come into the heart of the lamb and enter Yisrael, which is God's home?
Same time, 4 days.
Same time, yeah, 4 days before Passover. Now, why do you think God said if the household is too small to have a lamb on their own, they shall, go to their neighbor and make out an arrangement based upon the number of souls and the individual mouths to be fed?
Well, the thing is just practical. Because,
yep.
Some families are quite small. They may not have had any sheep.
Mm-hmm. That's true. And what God is trying to say here is, I don't want this to be a burden to you.
No.
It's a burden to me, but I've chosen this burden. It's not supposed to be a burden for you. I don't want you to have to make a sacrifice. I'm making the sacrifice. And so if you don't have a family that's large enough, join in with another of my families, is what he's communicating here. But he's also saying, speaking of individual souls and mouths to feed, souls don't have mouths. Souls don't eat. Bodies, people eat, people have mouths. So he's addressing the number of souls, but also wants us to know that the bodies are going to be fed by this. So he's telling us that this is a very unique sacrifice, that the one making the sacrifice is the lamb, in the case of the Lamb of God, Yahusha. Not the individuals. They're not offering this lamb to God. God's not hungry.
No.
They're going to consume it.
Yeah, it's certainly a religious notion that people go out and make sacrifices. It's almost, there's this, their God is a sadist and they're a masochist. And the more masochistic they are, the more they please this God. And it's outrageous.
Yes, God is saying you're not giving the lamb to me. You're going to consume it. So the lamb shall exist as an unblemished male. Now, unblemished is perfect. It's tamim, without defect, perfect, blameless, and innocent. Is there really such a thing as a perfect animal?
Can't be.
No.
No. So by God using perfect here, do you think maybe he's trying to draw our attention to something that would, if we make the connection, would help in our understanding?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. In fact, he's used Tamim previously in his Torah. This happens to be in Shemot, the second book of the Torah. In the first book of the Torah, Bereshith, he asked Abraham to walk to me and become Tamim. Perfect. So maybe he's trying to identify the means to perfection with this sacrificial lamb. You think?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, yeah. I think so. And second,
what it can be looked over by so many religious experts in Hebrew. Amazing.
Yeah,
really.
Yeah. Yeah, Larry, I think you changed phones, and this one doesn't work very well, unfortunately. There you go. That's that voice that I know and love. Okay. Now, the second thing is perfect. For the Passover lamb to qualify, the which would be Yahusha, he has to be perfect. And that would mean he'd have to be in perfect accord with Yahweh's Torah instructions. If he wasn't in perfect accord with Yahweh's Torah instructions, then he's paying a penalty for himself, not for us.
And he for also him to couldn't do, be the Messiah.
Correct, yeah. He has to be in perfect Tamim accord, completely innocent from the as judged from the standard, which is the Torah, which means every aspect of the Torah he became the living embodiment of, completely consistent with the Torah. He was absolutely Torah observant. Now, what that means is if you claim to be a Christian and claim to be a follower of your Jesus, even though you don't know his title, don't know his name, you're lying to yourself. If you were a follower of Yahusha, you would be Torah observant. But as a Christian, you're Torah adverse, which means you're absolutely lying to yourself when you claim to be a follower. You're not. You're walking in the opposite direction. He was a perfect representation of the Torah. Now, it goes on to say that he's going to be a year old, that he shall exist for you and actually be taken from the male lambs. And then God says, and he shall be for you, existing on your behalf, to be kept, cared for, and observed until the 14th day of this month. So, Kirk, your answer happened to be consistent with God. If your answer is consistent with God, your answer is correct.
Okay.
Yeah. And that's what Yahusha wanted us to do that's what Yahweh wanted us to do with Yahusha, is to observe, to pay attention to him, especially during these 4 days, so that we might come to understand what he was doing, to know who he is, that he's the diminished corporeal manifestation of Yahweh, set apart from Yahweh for the purpose of becoming the literal embodiment of the Torah, so we could be properly guided to Yahweh. And so, do you think there's also a connection here between, it's 4 days. God didn't choose 5 days. He didn't choose 3 days. He chose 4 days. Why do you suppose, guys, that he chose 4 days?
400, all the, when it's testing, 4 days.
Right. Always the period of a time of testing is always a multiple of four. It rained for 40 days and 40 nights during the flood. The children of Israel were slaves in Egypt for 400 years. They wandered through the wilderness for 40 years. Yahusha was tested by the adversary 40 days and 40 nights. It's always a multiple of 40. Now, do you know another place we can apply that multiple of 40 or 400 to achieve a reasonable understanding of God's timeline?
Oh, with the Yobels.
Absolutely. 40 Yobel. A Yobel is 7 times 7 plus 1 years. 7 times 7 is 49 plus 1 is 50. If you multiply 40 times 50, you get 2,000. Let me give you some examples. We know, according to Yahweh's Torah witness, that Adam and Chawa were expelled from the Garden of Eden in 3968 BCE. In 1968 BCE, which is exactly 40 Yobel, 2,000 years later, Yahweh, working with and through Abraham, articulated the means for us to return to that garden, into a perfect relationship with Yahweh by establishing the covenant. It was established on Mount Moriah in 1968 BCE, 2,000 years after the expulsion from the garden. What date do you come to if you add 2,000 years to 1968 BCE?
33 CE.
Right. Now, why isn't it 32 CE as opposed to 33 CE? Did the Catholic religion goof when they created their new calendar?
Well, they didn't have a zero, did they?
They didn't have a year zero, which means you go from 1 BCE to 1 CE in 1 year and not 2 years. So they just screwed up. And so that puts you into 33 CE, which is exactly when, on the 28th of March, 4 days before Passover in 33 CE, Yahusha arrived in Jerusalem.
Now,
exactly.
Why did they feel the same
amount of time. Go ahead.
Why did they feel they had to designate a separate time from, like, BC and BCE?
Oh, because they were convinced wrongly that Jesus was born in year one. And that's so they established AD, the year of our Lord, for the year that that they thought that Jesus was born, not recognizing that God is eternal. God's not born, and his arrival as a child, while it had to be towards the end of the fourth millennia of human history, outside of the garden to coincide with all of the prophecies, that's not a date that's on Yahweh's calendar. It should never have been a date used to establish a timeline. God's year zero begins the moment that Adam and Chawa are booted out of the garden. From the history of man, that's when time begins. And the Roman Catholics, of course, weren't smart enough to realize that. So they picked a day that coincided with their celebration of Christmas. And they picked the wrong day, even for his arrival. It wasn't in year one as they have it, but it was actually in the fall of what would now be 2 BCE on Sukkah, Tabernacles, that he arrived. So they even got that wrong, but that was their attempt. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're considering Yahweh's testimony regarding the timing difference between the day the Passover lamb enters the home and the day that the lamb is slaughtered for the benefit of the family. And we find that that is four, and we were going over the multiples of 40 yobel. And what we find is that from 33 CE, which happens to be year 4000 Yah, to if you add 2000 years from 33 CE, year 4000 Yah, you end up at 2033. And so it's pretty obvious once you do the math, once you just think through the examples that Yahweh has given us, as to when he's going to come back to fulfill the last two mikra. The first four were fulfilled in year 4000 Yah, 33 CE. The last two will be fulfilled in year 6000 Yah, 2033.
And Moshe reinforces that as well. I mean, he says 2 days you'll be without them, the third day you're going to be with them, and that third day, of course, represents that 1,000 years of Sukkah. So.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so it is reinforced in many different places. And it says here, the lamb shall exist, and we talked about is perfect, tamim, so perfectly in accord with the Torah, and he shall be in existing on your behalf, cared for, observed, until the 14th day of this month, which is why Yahusha gave the sign of, you know, what you're going to give the sign for you, what you can observe here is the 3 days and three nights in the heart of the lamb. He said, observe the lamb, is exactly what he was telling them to do, consistent with this presentation, the first presentation of Pesach in the Torah. And the entire community of witnesses of the children of Yisrael shall take his life to encourage understanding around sundown. So, you know, when the Christians decided that they would base their anti-Semitism on Jews killing their Lord, the fact is that the children of Israel are prescribed to take the life of the sacrificial lamb. Now, in the case of the rabbis in 33 CE, they actually didn't kill him. It was the Romans that crucified him. But we don't ever want to let evidence and reason get in the way of religion. But the instruction yeah. is for the children of Israel to collectively take the life of the sacrificial lamb. That was God's instruction?
Yes, actually it was. And by the way, the Romans even renamed Yahusha, didn't they?
No, yeah, they sure did.
Mm-hmm.
Now, so we're God tells us that the purpose of this is to encourage understanding. The life of the lamb is going to be sacrificed. And so that represents the body of Yahusha. And if you understand what happens, then you're in a position to capitalize on and act upon this invitation to meet with God called Passover. So the whole thing was all designed to encourage understanding. The whole idea of the lamb coming into the home 4 days early is to encourage understanding. The Hebrew word is bien. It means to make connections and to thereby understand at sundown. So it is at sundown that we begin this celebration of Pesach. He said they should actually choose to take some of the blood and place it upon the two upright pillars of the doorway, and also upon the lintel, upon their homes, where beneficially and on behalf of the relationships you eat it inside. That was Shemoth, Exodus 12:7. Okay, guys, why do you think that Yahweh wanted the blood on the upright pillars of the door and the lintel that forms the upper part of the door? Why didn't he say put it on the rooftop? Why didn't he say put it on the actual swinging, the part of the door that closes that would lock you out? Why on the upright pillars and why on the lintel of the doorway to a home, and, you know, why not on the synagogue? Why not some other place?
Because that's the doorway, the narrow doorway.
Right. And the passageway is created by the upright pillars and the lintel that's on top. That's the passageway. He didn't want it on the part that closes and restricts egress. It's on the framework of the very doorway, because Yahusha serves as the framework for the doorway to life. And he is the upright one, the upright pillar of the tabernacle, and so it's in the upright beams of this doorway. It's not on the roof. It's not on a public building. And it's on the doorway to homes, because the covenant is all about homes. It's all about families. And so Yahweh is explaining here that it's his family that he is providing the doorway to life. So when we return to Shattering Myths, we're going to continue to share what Yahweh had to say about this, the doorway to life eternal. We'll be back in a moment. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're considering Yahweh's instructions regarding the first celebration of Passover. And we have Martin, who's calling in from Missouri. Hello, Martin. Welcome.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
Good. You guys were talking earlier about, and I got in late, maybe you talked about this, but paganism and masochism part, I just got on that, but it occurred to me that, the Christians,
mm-hmm.
in the cross, and, turning that into their message.
Right.
Especially this time of year,
a bit sadistic.
That they would do such a thing.
Yeah, it's sadistic, isn't it?
It really is. And then I see these crosses going up at various churches, in the area, and I know what they're going to do. They're going to climb up on them and hang themselves.
Yeah.
And
in fact, you're right in many ways, Martin, regarding the cross. First of all, the Christian cross is not the apparatus that Yosha fulfilled Passover on. It was the shape of a capital T with the lintel at the top of what would be the doorpost, just as it is in the doorway to heaven as it's described in the Exodus. There were no Roman crosses that were like Christian crosses. The lintel, the horizontal pole, was always on the top of the vertical pole. And so it's the wrong image. The image that they choose happens to be one of the most common pagan sun god images ever. So they're basing their imagery on the pagan sun goddess and god imagery. Also, the sacrifice of the Passover lamb is only to be celebrated very briefly because it's the next day. It's matzah, where our souls are being unleavened of the fungus of yeast of religious and political sin. That is a vastly more important day, and that's so that we can celebrate being born into Yahweh's covenant family. And but you find that in Christian churches, particularly Roman Catholic, for example, they just love the crucifix. They just love the scene of the man being tortured. And that's not the image at all. It's like we can control him because he's nailed to this pagan cross, and it's a control mechanism, and it's ghoulish, and this is a celebration of life, not a celebration of death.
That's what happened when Constantine saw the cross on the sun. It was a way to control people. Mm-hmm. And he did conquer.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, he heard Satan. He heard Satan's voice just like Paul did on the road to Damascus, and he saw the sign of his religion superimposed on the God of his religion, superimposed on the Son, and said, "In this under this sign, conquer." And it's precisely what he did. And
the Christians claim that's their doorway. They made that into a barricade.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, they put their barricade right before the doorway to life. That's why, you know, the barricade that is Easter is right before the doorway to life. And it is why God hates religion. That's why we spent the first hour of this program talking about proving that the Christianity's claim is untrue. So that if you were a Christian with an open mind, you're going to realize that your religion has lied to you about the crux of its basis, of its very reason to exist. They've lied to you. And if they've lied to you about that, why do you trust them? Why not walk away from them? Why not find someone who is trustworthy? And fortunately, Yahweh is trustworthy. In fact, if you can hang on here, Martin, we're right now in the midst of God telling us the fact that the body of the Passover lamb is going to cease to exist. He says, this is Shemoth Exodus 12, 8 and 9 and 10. He says, "Then they should genuinely choose to eat and be completely nourished by way of the flesh during this night. Roast it over a fire and always eat it over matzah, which is unyeasted bread and with bitter herbs. You should." So the first day of matzah begins with Passover. And so we're being told that these two things are together. Always eat it over matzah. Don't even think of having the Passover lamb, which is the celebration of the doorway to life, without having it over and as part of matzah, which is the means to perfection. Because if you were to have Passover without matzah, that's the worst of all circumstances. You're eternally separated from God. That's Sheol. That's an express ticket to hell. Always have it in association with matzah. And yet, there isn't a Christian in the world that even knows what matzah is. Since you should never consume any part of it raw or without due consideration. In other words, it needs to be roasted over the fire. And never participate in Passover unless you have given it due consideration, unless you understand what it represents. It's not going to be boiled, cooked in water, but instead as a condition, rather, roasting it above the fire. its head and its legs attached and its inner parts close by. He wants you to recognize that this is the Passover lamb. It's not just a hunk of meat there. And you shall make certain that nothing remains of the lamb prior to morning. And so the remainder of him, of the lamb, prior to the approach of morning, you shall literally and consistently burn up in the fire. So what happened to the Passover lamb as Yahusha performed Passover before the eyes of the world? What happened to his body that night? It was burned up. Right? Ceasing to exist. Yeah. God gave us this instruction on how to do this, how to celebrate it, so when it actually materialized before our eyes, we would recognize what was being done. And what did Christians do? They created a barricade to understanding. They piled their lies right on top of the truth in the place they would do humanity the most harm.
Well, the cross, like you said, keeps them from moving on to matzah.
Right.
I had a question.
Sure.
Yahweh instructs us to present ourselves before the Heavenly Mother on these days.
Yes.
And I'm not sure how to do that.
Okay, that's a great point. Yahweh is constantly telling us that on these days that we should answer his invitation and appear in the presence of the maternal aspect of his light, the Isha, which is our spiritual mother. And so the question is, how do you do that? And the way that you do that is that you recognize that Yahweh's presence here on earth in the midst of our troubled world happens two ways. One is God makes himself known to us through his Torah, his word. His word represents him, and so does his spirit. And we come to meet his spirit, we come to benefit from his spirit when we engage in the covenant as it's laid out in the Torah. And so when you observe the Torah, when you bring the Torah close, when you read and recite the Torah, when you celebrate Pesach, Matzah, and Bukurim in conjunction with what God says in the Torah, when the Torah becomes the centerpiece of your celebration of these days, particularly the Torah's presentation of the covenant, where we, by way of Yahusha and the set-apart spirit, are adopted into God's family and empowered, best way to come into the presence of the spirit, the same way you come into the presence of Yahweh through his Torah.
Okay, well, I've been doing okay on that part then.
You okay? Yeah, that's exactly how you do it. It's, you know, it's I don't think there's anything that God was coy about. He's pretty much direct in our presentation. And you know, he talked about, for example, the Torah opens with Yahweh saying that he created the material and the spiritual realm. And then he says that he, as light, spoke the universe into existence. So he's equating himself to light, and he says that he spoke the universe into existence. The next thing he talks about is the role of the set-apart spirit in expanding this universe and setting it in order and thereby associating his word with his spirit. And so you want to come into the presence of the set-apart spirit? Come into the presence of his word. And you'll find his word.
The primary purpose of all this is for what? It's for understanding. I mean, I realize there's benefits on our end, but it's really for understanding. And so many times people get hung up, especially if it's their first, second, or third, you know, Pesach, on say the ritualistic end of it, but we're not in the land. There are no loi. We can't really make a Pesach lamb, but we can eat lamb on matzah and understand what it's about and what it means and pass that understanding on. And that's really the greatest thing we'll ever do.
Right. We can come to understand why Yahweh said, always have the Passover lamb over matzah, unyeasted bread. we can come to understand what that means. And understanding it, it empowers us to capitalize upon it. So you're right. Yahweh has an answer book. If you want to know the answer to any question, he has a book of answers. It's called the Torah. Torah means teaching. We are taught God's answers when we go to the Torah. And so how do we meet with Yahweh? Read the Torah. How do we know the path to Yahweh? Read the Torah. Where besides the Torah, is this seven-step path to God that begins at Pesach Passover? Where besides the Torah is it presented?
Nowhere else.
That's correct. Where else is the covenant presented besides in the Torah?
Nowhere else.
Nowhere else. Where is the whole concept of our spiritual mother, this manifestation of the maternal nature of God's light, where is it presented other than the Torah?
Nowhere else.
Nowhere else. So, I mean, the answer is the Torah. And particularly the parts of the Torah that speak of the covenant, this family relationship that Yahweh is establishing with his children, and the intersection of that covenant with God's means for us to walk to him to become perfect, which is these days, the Mikra, particularly of Pesach, Matzah, and Bukkotim. We'll be back in a moment. Welcome back to Shattering Mist. I'm your host, Yada. We have Martin here from Missouri and Larry from Florida. Yada has some more statements that he wants to share about the nature of Pesach. He says, and this is how you should always be nourished by him. So God is explaining that the purpose of Passover is to nourish us. It's not for us to make a sacrifice to him. The tie fastened around your waist should be prepared, and you should have your sandals on your feet, along with your staff in your hand, which is a walking stick, and you should choose to eat it, being completely nourished by him quickly. So why do you think that God wanted us to have be dressed, have a walking stick and our sandals on when we eat Passover?
Happened because we had to get out of Egypt real quickly. I think the reason that you have the staff, I think the upright pole is represented by the staff.
Okay, if you were looking at a doorway, I'm looking at the doorway to my studio right now. I can look at that doorway. I can admire that doorway. Does that doorway do me any good unless I walk through it?
No.
No. So God is saying, you know, I want you to have your sandals on. I want you to be dressed to go because this is a doorway to life, and this is the day that you walk through it. You know, this is the first step of seven steps that, you know, end up in my home. It's a portal for you to walk through. You got to engage, or you aren't going to benefit from it.
We need to be prepared to walk away from anything that's anti-Yah.
Correct.
And we want us to be prepared to do that.
Correct. Right. Absolutely. And you know, when we recognize
that include the barricade there, Martin.
Yeah, absolutely. But you know what he's saying there is really important. It's Larry and I were once evangelical Christians and political. And the good thing about Yahweh's testimony is he explained why we should not have been engaged in politics or religion. And once God made it clear to us that that was a prerequisite of the covenant, that we need to walk away from politics and religion, we didn't dilly-dally. At that point, you know, it's the issue, I think, Larry, that you have with so many people who engage on your Facebook site, and an inconvenient truth, is that they're unwilling to disassociate from religion when religion's proven wrong. We began this program by talking about all the things that were wrong with the Christian celebration of Easter. But when it's proven wrong, you ought not dilly-dally. You know, the opportunity to walk away may not last very long. You need to be ready to go. And
well, it's somewhat disheartening to see that people will tie their time up into something that's been proven wrong. Put it in their face, and they don't care.
And they still wallow in the lie, and they just move on to the next lie when they're confronted with the truth. And God says, be prepared to go. And he says, this is Passover, according to and to approach Yahweh. You want to approach Yahweh? You've got to be ready to engage. You've got to be ready to walk to him along the path that he has provided. You've got to be willing to walk away from the crucible of human, religious, and political impression.
You know, I had a brother that walked away from Catholicism just like I did. But he jumped. I think he jumped from the frying pan into the fire because he became a deacon at a church at another church.
Yeah.
That wasn't Catholic. And
yeah, that's about a 3% improvement.
I think he had he had knowledge, but he didn't have reach understanding.
Yeah.
And he didn't understand that it wasn't just the church, it's the Bible that was wrong, too.
Yeah, it was the whole Christian New Testament. It's based on a lie.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, now he's across the ferry and
It is true that Protestant and Orthodox Christianity is probably 1% better than is Roman Catholicism. Roman Catholicism is the very basis of the beast that Daniel speaks of in his prophetic testimony. And Orthodox Christianity is about 99% as bad as Roman Catholicism. And Protestant Christianity, depending on the strain, and if you're dealing with the Anglican Church or the Orthodox forms of Protestant Christianity that are based upon England claiming that they were the new Orthodoxy, then you're 99% as bad as Roman Catholicism. And the most liberated evangelical forms of Christianity are maybe 3% better. But 3% better is still 97% polluted with the same lies. Doesn't do you any good. Frying pan into the fire. You're right, Martin. We'll be back tomorrow.